Peggy is also recording.
Okay.
One
I'm
going to
do item one and two. Let me know and we'll get going.
Might get logged into Facebook in time for Keith to come.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We are live on Facebook.
Okay, great. Man. Good morning, all. I'd like to welcome you all to the Leon County Research and Development Authority Board of Governors meeting. It is August 3rd and 11:05. So, officially calling the meeting to order. Introduction of guests. Ron, I believe that we have a couple of guests as well as a new staff member.
Yes. Kevin Byrne from the University Financing Foundation and Ann Tomsky, also from Tuft, will be presenting today. And then we have a new person joining the team, Karen Thurston-Chavez. And I want to let her introduce herself just briefly on kind of where she's coming from.
Hey, everybody. So I've been in communications and marketing for nonprofits. I've spent some time at the state for a few decades. We'll just leave it at that. I've done communications, marketing, branding, membership recruitment, retention, community engagement, public relations. I'd say, on the job experience, I've learned the bulk of this stuff at the Florida Dental Association, where I worked for about 14 years. And starting up my own nonprofit, Broken Hearts of Florida, which was a support group for families affected by congenital heart disease, also gave me a lot of experience with community engagement, building awareness of something a lot of people were not aware of, and just bringing families together so that they could support each other. So my most recent job was at the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. I did the communications for the Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection. And I'm super happy to be here a week and a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really fortunate for her to be here, and she's got vast experience to bring to the table. This is more experience than we've had in this position as a director of marketing engagement. So again, very fortunate to have her. We're looking forward to getting moving on a lot of initiatives that we've been working on. So.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome aboard. Again, very excited, even when we saw your resume, and now we get to have you. Person, so thank you. Next, we do have the approval of participation by electronic formats in the room. So, I entertain a motion.
So, moved.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, so it's been properly motioned and second the approval of participation by electronic means. All in favor, acknowledge with aye. Okay, no opposition, motion carries. There we go. Any modifications to the agenda? None. Okay, public comment. There was none. And then approval of draft minutes. We see that we have those in for June 1st. I trust that you've had an opportunity to review them. If there are no corrections, entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay. Properly motioned and second the approval of the draft minutes for June 1st. All in favor, acknowledge by.
Aye.
Motion carries. Excellent. We're going to move into the consent agenda. We have that presented before you. Would welcome a motion for acceptance, or if there is any request to have an item removed. What is your pleasure? Okay, so it's been properly motioned and second approval of the consent agenda. All in favor, please acknowledge by.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries, which moves us directly into item number 8 and our guest. So, Ron, take it away, sir.
Yeah, actually, we're going to start before we get to the guest. I'm going to sort of tee this up for you a little bit and get to the background.
Yes.
Give me 1 second to share the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Find the screen. And everyone at home see that?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. We can't see on the screen, so if you've got a question or comment, please just speak up. So, as most of you know by now, we received a project cost estimate on the Northwood Innovation Labs facility. And that estimate came in $6.2 million over budget. Since that time, we've been exploring a number of different options to fill that hole. So what I'm going to do is present you with some of the critical factors, some options that we've uncovered, and drill down into a couple of those a little more specifically, namely some of the other funding options that we're pursuing. As well as hearing from the University Financing Foundation and then a discussion from Melissa about public-private partnerships, something that we're going to have to consider in the process of considering some of these options. And then we will have a recommended board action and then an opportunity for some discussion. So I just want to give you kind of the high level so you see where we're headed with this this process. So. Just to give you the numbers, this is kind of where we started at with the EDA budget was about $17 million, and you can see how it breaks down. Obviously, the issue, you know, one of the big issues that we have is with COVID and the changes in construction costs and market. We also, when we did this this budget and the concept, it was several years ago. And we did not have the benefit of an architect and getting through that process to know exactly what kind of building we were going to build. We used some rules of thumb, you know, based on 40,000 square feet and a certain number of dollars per square foot. But when we drilled down into the specifics, we ended up with something a little more expensive. But we think it's a great program for the building. And you've all seen some of the preliminary designs. And we think we've got the design we need and want. And this is what it's going to cost. So we're up to about $23 million. And we did finally get confirmation yesterday from the architect that through their detailed cost estimate that this is a pretty good number compared to this. What we originally got was a kind of a back of the envelope, but through their detailed cost estimate, they think this is a good estimate. And we're going to keep looking at this going forward as we get through the process, but and then also look for opportunities to do some value engineering. But this is the number we're working with. So in looking at the options that we have, these are some of the critical factors, namely the timeline. And the timeline is being driven by the EDA and the grant award agreement. So we have to be to bid in January of 2022 in order to break ground in March of 2022 as required by the EDA. And the objective was to be completed 18 months after that in September of 2023. We have a little more latitude on the completion date, but we have no latitude on the date for breaking ground. If we fail to make the timeline, it could result in loss of that EDA funding. That's pretty critical. Now it's not to say that we would absolutely lose, that there's no chance to amend it, but from what we're being told by the project manager at EDA is, as I was told at the beginning, is if you can't hit that date, just send me a letter rescinding your award. So hopefully I don't have to find out if he's bluffing or not. And in terms of when we have the funding available, we need to have those funds at the time that we award the bid. I think it's you know disingenuous to award a bid that you can't pay for. So we need to have that in place anyway, even if it's not immediately available. We need to know when it's going to be available to meet the payout timeline on the construction costs. And then one of the things that we're looking at is obviously free money is better than not free money. And when we're looking at other options, what we want to be able to do is to use future fundraising to retire anything that's not free money. So just keep that in mind as a critical factor. And the other thing is, you know, we've been working on pro formas. We've done a few, you know, through the process in terms of when we applied for the grant. We had a pro forma based on our best guess at the time. But at that time, we didn't know what building we had, you know, we're going to have. We didn't know what the staffing requirements were going to look like based on some of the technologies we're going to be dealing with. So some of those things are starting to come into focus. And we think now we can start to put together a more detailed operating plan and the corresponding budget that goes with that. So we don't have that for you today, but we will in the next few weeks have something more specific. But the key takeaway is, even with that, we don't expect that the cash flow from operations is going to be there to pay any debt service. That having said that, that just means we're going to have to go raise other money. So when I say operations, I'm not including other sources of funds we might include in the operations. That's not, you know, basically membership fees and sponsorships and, you know, basic incubator type fundraising. There's going to have to be some serious fundraising outside of the normal operations of an incubator. And then the other critical factor is some of the approvals that are required. You know, the EDA, you know, they carry the big stick in this deal. So whatever we do, they've got to clear. And so if we bring in partners in the deal, they're going to have to approve whatever mechanism we come up with to facilitate that partnership and to get the funds where they need to be, as well as any security interests that the EDA may have in this arrangement. So there are complications that are going to go along with this that we're going to have to work through. We don't have a clear answer yet from the EDA on this. We wanted to have a clear proposal before we went to them to, you know, get more specifics on the process. But based on prior experience with them, I think it's going to require some scope amendment. There may be some other documents that are required, because I know they, in the application process, they got very heavily into some of the property lien situation. I know Melissa can attest to that. So anything different in terms of how we structured the deal is going to take a heavy lift with EDA, I believe. And then obviously our funding partners in terms of the intergovernmental agency /OEB and FSU Research Foundation, it's going to require their buy-in to what we're doing. Haven't gone to them with the detail of this particular plan yet. I have let them know that we're exploring these options as well as the other options. So, I mean, they're at least aware of that, but I haven't presented them with any specific terms yet. So I think it's going to come down to the specifics before we can to get their buy-in. But I think, you know, I think in both of those cases, the objective is to get the facility built and to ensure that we get the outcomes that we're looking for. So, and that there's some mechanism to make sure that at the end, LCRDA is, you know, still owns the building. So those are sort of the keys. And then the other part is the on any debt issues, if we decide on an option, I'll get to these other options, but if we decide on a debt option, it will require the approval of the Leon County Board of County Commissioners on that. And there's also some other reporting requirements with the state that we would have to go through. So when we looked at the options, these were sort of the big picture options that we found. And the first one was the Florida Job Growth Grant Fund. We knew that this was out there, and the timing was amazing, because I found out on, I think it was July 7th or something like that, about the cost projection, and the funds became available July 1st. So we immediately got together, put the application in, and I'm going to talk more about that. But we looked at options related to just doing traditional debt. There's nothing says we can't go borrow the money, but is that something that we want to look at doing? That was not part of the original plan. The original plan going in said, let's not burden the incubator with debt, because most of the information out there says that it can't, traditionally they cannot support debt. And then, you know, obviously private contributions and other grants. That's the reason we set up the 501c3. As a local government entity, we can accept contributions, the tax deductible contributions, but many of the foundations and other entities are geared towards supporting 501c3. So it's an easier sell. And then it also makes sense with some of the other operations that we're looking at related to the incubator to have the 501c3 house, the incubator operations. So Bill's going to talk a little bit more about that. And then the other timely thing that happened is prior to determining that we had this shortfall, we had some folks that brought the University Financing Foundation to town, and they were interested in looking at the ecosystem in Tallahassee. And they reached out to us to set up a meeting, and we had a conversation about what we're up to and what we're trying to accomplish. And they told us what they do. And so we kind of got to know each other. And just a matter of a couple of weeks later, we had a need. It's a pretty interesting fit for our needs. So they appreciate Kevin and Ann flying down from Atlanta this morning to come and talk to us more about this. And they've presented their concept to the Northwide Innovation Labs Oversight Committee, who passed it on to the Executive Committee, who is now passing this concept on to the board for its consideration. And then the last one is obviously, failure is not an option.
Absolutely.
So we got to figure out, how to get this done. I there was one other option that was brought to me this morning. I wasn't going to talk about it, but our custodian said, there's always the lottery. I hadn't considered that one.
But. Yeah, there you go.
So the Florida Job Growth Grant Fund is something that we've actually applied for in the past. It is, for those that don't know, it's currently a $74 million fund. That fund is in basically overseen by DEO, but it's at the discretion of the governors. All it takes is the governor's signature. So DEO vets the projects and will evaluate them and rank them and present this ranked list to the governor. There is no cutoff date. It's a rolling application process. So we applied for this a couple of weeks ago. I think it's a pretty good application. I think it checks all the boxes as far as what DEO is looking for. 2 days after I submitted it, we got a call from a DEO analyst asking lots of questions, and I got some really favorable feedback, namely that they thought that the types of jobs we were creating was exactly what the state is looking for these particular funds. So I was encouraged by that. We'd also coincidentally had briefed Representative Alexander, who's the Florida House representative for our district. And I had given him the official Innovation Park briefing a few weeks ago, and we set up a follow-up. We did that virtually. We set up a follow-up for him to come out to the park, which happened to be right after we submitted the DEO application. And he has been incredibly helpful in ushering this application along. We got a call yesterday at about 5 o'clock that said that that DEO had flagged our application. It is being moved through their business development for its evaluation process and to be included in the ranking. And then it will be briefed all the way up to the governor's office. Keeping in mind that Representative Alexander is not the only state legislature who is pushing for a project. So it is a competitive process. There's a lot that's going to go into the decision-making, but it's very encouraging, just put it that way. This is further than we've ever gotten with this process. Yes, sir?
Is there a cap on it, or do you ask for a certain amount of funds? Or
we asked for 6.2. Okay. So
you don't want to get a lunch on there at 6.25.
Well, actually, it was the actual dollar amount, so we included that budget.
Everything.
Yeah, we put the 37 cents on the end.
Okay, good.
But the that has come up in conversation about the amount, because at $74 million, that's a a big chunk of that amount. And we thought it was important to make the ask without getting greedy, because we've got to ask for more. We could use more for other things. But we'll go with that, and we'll see what they come back with. But they could award a lesser amount.
Okay.
that is possible?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. From a timing standpoint, I have asked to see if we can get some more information on the expected timing, but as you would expect, that they're not really coming
right.
with any specifics on that. So understandable. And we'll keep pressing for that, and we are exploring whether or not there are other channels that we need to communicate through to try to make sure that we get our position communicated to the governor. So we've had those conversations, and we're going to keep working on that. Another option is traditional debt. So as I mentioned, there's a whole approval process that goes along with this, but just to get a sense of what was possible, I reached out to our banker, Hancock Whitney Bank, and just to explore the opportunity. And they are interested. That's something they think they could do. Now, obviously, for something of this scope, we'd have to go out to bid. We would have to follow the statutory requirements for debt issues, no matter whether it's a line of credit or a bridge loan. So. But I just wanted to know what it was going to take to do that. They would have an oversight role in the project. They would also have to lien the property, take security interest in the property. They guessed at an interest rate in the range of 5%. They would be willing to do most likely a 24 to 36 month interest only repayment with a balloon, more like a line of credit. Really, the $1 million, or in this case, the $8 million question is what's the repayment plan? Where are the funds going to come from to repay it? And, that would include all the options we're going to talk about today. We would raise money. So that's what they would be looking for as far as the next steps to see if they would continue with their interest. Obviously, our next steps would have to be some form of procurement, but that would also include, how we would intend to repay it. And then private fundraising and other grants. And these are not mutually exclusive options. As I said at the beginning, and one of the critical factors is no matter what we do, unless we get the $6.2 million out of the state, if it's any other debt or any other creative thing we come up with, it's likely going to involve repaying something. So we're going to have to go after more money. More free money to retire any debt that we might take on or any other relationship that we might take on. So, those things actually, they take time to develop those kind of relationships, especially if it's a private deal. Some of the public deals take time to go through process and deadlines. And then the other thing on the private side, we think it's going to be a lot easier to raise money once there's a building. Donors like to see what it is they're investing in. We do think, to some extent, we might be able to raise some money as we have these designs in place and they know a little more concretely what we're going to build. But even then, once they see it, we think we could sell some donations. It might be naming rights or other things. Bill's going to talk a little bit more about that. He's got some other thoughts on some of the areas that we're working on and some of the areas he can go after.
Okay. Thanks, Ron. Yeah, if not doing it's not an option, how do we get it done? And so we're brainstorming all of those things and we're chasing, as Ron said, free money, because the intent is if we borrow, we would want to repay that as quickly as possible. The other reason to do it is to take the burden off of operations so that we can empower entrepreneurs and accelerate companies more quickly. And that's the end game. We want to create companies. We want to create high wage jobs. So whether we have the money for the facility today, we would still be leveraging our nonprofit with that end in mind. On said, we submitted the DEO grant. There is an unprecedented amount of federal money right now through the SBA, the EDA, and other sources. And in my first 100 days, in addition to the 6.2, our total grant submissions have been around $7 million. In the next 100 days, I would say that our grant submissions will meet or exceed that amount. given all of the opportunities that we have both directly and as an ecosystem partner with others through EDA, SBA, and other funding sources. In addition to the new funding opportunities that were just announced, there is residual funding last year to the tune of about $1 billion for which we intend to submit the 6.2 gap against those funding opportunities. That is rolling funding. Those are unused sources of it's unused money, and our project aligns really well with the intent of that funding. And as Ron mentioned, we have the ability to go out and get foundation money, sponsorship money, and individual donor money as soon as we get the approval from the IRS related to 501c3. And while it sounds like a lot of money, and it is, it's not unprecedented in terms of how other nonprofits have found funding and created an inverted pyramid to figure out exactly how many different levels of contribution is needed to both get the project done and or fund some of the operations. So I believe that it's eminently doable, and this is our mission. This is why we're all in the room today, and we want to create an impact for generations in our region.
Ron?
Yeah.
Just a quick question, Bill, or to you. I guess, Bill, this is to you. Mm-hmm. This residual amount, who do those grant applications actually go to? Is it EDA? Is it SBA? Is it...
My understanding is the leftover, it is in the EDA's notice of funding below the new funding, and it says 2020. But when you click through to it, application criteria is on the SBA site itself.
Okay. But it is clearly, you know who we're applying to.
We do.
And they're the same people who would have been behind the 6.2. The 6.2 will be looked at by the same people that gave us the grant in the first place. That's what I'm trying to get around to.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Because I saw something that suggested that there were routine, I don't know if there is such a thing, follow-on grants for projects that have been funded where clearly, because of what has happened with construction materials, et cetera, you get a bump because everybody knows that. But I couldn't figure out if that was, you know, which agency it really was.
And if you have that, by all means, let us know. But we've had conversations with the EDA specifically, and our local rep, the state rep, and basically what we're told is no. The expectation is you have a shortfall, you go find the money.
Which is the same thing, and you all recall that TCC has an EDA grant too, and we got some of the talent, so yeah. So you're not aware of anything that provides this cushion money?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, and that is what Greg today indicated to us. This was a funded project. You go out and find the money.
Yeah.
Having said that, my belief is that this this $1 billion goal is what that may be at the source of the funds that. That you're speaking of.
It just makes too much sense for people to put all of this effort into reviewing all these applications and know just as well as we do what's happened with construction costs, you know, for them to just go, you can't build it.
And there may be some creative ways to structure grant applications to go after this. I've had some counsel on that. So,
has anyone looked into a lot of this, like CARES money, essentially COVID money from the federal government. Now, this is not directly having anything to do with COVID, but the byproduct of COVID, the construction cost escalations and so forth. certainly does. So that's a qualifier or not, I don't know, but I have no idea what the source of that money is. I know the state has gotten bucket loads of it over the last year or so. I understand that the state has not used it, and we're looking for ways to utilize it. So I don't know who to talk to, who to ask, or anything like that, but I understand it's there. Question is whether, you know, feeling the outcome from cost escalations would be a qualifier or not.
That's a great point. And in fact, this leftover money is Public Works and Economic Adjustment Assistance Program. So this was, my understanding, the same bucket of money that the states get, and the federal government has around $1 billion left over.
And I would think you'd have absolutely no trouble from the architects or construction people to justify how a $17 million project became a $23 million project.
That's exactly right. It's all over the news, supply chain, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the other comment that I'll make is that what's interesting and exciting about these new notice of funding opportunities through the EDA, many of them are programmatic and not construction in nature. So they encourage collaboration. We're sort of ahead of the game there with our great ecosystem partners. However, if you have a project that needs help with construction, you're able to write that into these proposals as well. It is an unprecedented amount of money. And in the webinar, they said it's once in a generation or once in a lifetime kinds of funds. So knock on wood, I'm cautiously optimistic. As we look at our regional ecosystem, without this project, our region has a puzzle piece that's conspicuously missing. With it, in talking directly with Greg today, while he's non-committal, he thinks that our region sets up well. Urban, rural, city, agri, high tech, underserved. And so that's what I would say about both the past funding and these new notice of funding opportunities.
And as you can see, Bill is on top of all the stuff that's coming out. So anything we can find, we're finding. We're also working with the Office of Economic Vitality on things like ARPA funding that's so far small potatoes, relatively speaking, to some of these other dollars. It's going to help us fund some things. But, you know, he'll talk more about it. We've got some money coming from some of that, the ARPA dollars. That's a big piece, and there's a lot that's going to go into getting those grants. But
yes, absolutely. You recognize.
Were you done, Bill?
Yes, yeah. Ma'am.
Well, you said something that fits with something I also wanted to raise. So I think we all have seen the great PR on the groundbreaking of the new Interdisciplinary Research Center.
Mm-hmm.
Which just sounds wonderful. But I think we need to get something out there to differentiate ourselves. To the untrained ear, it's like, well, what are they doing and what are these people doing? And I think it's a real opportunity to go, you know, put a real positive spin on it. Things are on the move at Innovation Park. Here's one piece of the puzzle. Here's the other piece of the puzzle. And make sure, if we can, that is it Laurel Fulkerson, the interim?
Yes.
That, if possible, that she's in on the message. Or that some of those people are really sort of in on it. So there's a real understanding. And frankly, I couldn't do an elevator pitch on what the difference is. I mean, obviously, one's the university, one's us. One, I understand the university can only go so far toward commercialization before they have to go someplace else. But I don't really know that. And we should all know that. You know, we should all be able to say that in three sentences. What's the difference? I couldn't.
And I think that's a great point. And I think it goes to the point of looking for the skill set that we've now secured with Karen by way of storytelling and connecting the dots and making sure that that story is present in their minds, and that as everything is happening, it's the buildup of what is to come, but it's all centered around the work that we're doing here. So yes, great, great point, and look forward to working with Ron and Karen, the new tag team sidekick that we'll get to work on messaging. So yeah, we'll get that going. Bill, was there, Eric, you recognize us.
Yeah, let me just, this might be talking a bit out of school, but oh, what the heck.
Okay. You can do it.
We're not in school anyway.
We're just being recorded.
So the IRCB, the C, commercialization, is a political word.
Mm-hmm.
It was there to stimulate interest on the part of the state. Now, although having said that, there is capability and design into it for companies if they qualify, if they're interested, and so forth. What does that mean? Rather than it's an open bid concept, there are some labs that will have doors, basically. And what that means is that if you are a company, and it makes sense in the context of the purpose of the whole building to have a location there, there's a way of doing it so that they can maintain separation and collaboration and all that good stuff. So that's really it. It is really not in any way competing with the incubator, and which is more traditional in the sense that there will be closed doors. There will be opportunities for collaboration, 100% of the building. So that's the major distinction. The purpose of the building is to service the needs of the university, the faculty, to get interdisciplinary research going that's stimulated so that there will be a large, hopefully, impact on the grant base at the university, which does everybody a lot of good, and so on and so forth. So that's really it. The other thing I would point out, Laurel is an advocate of both projects. Obviously, she was a participant in transferring $2.5 million from FSU Research Foundation to this project. So there is no confusion. There is no space between her and her willingness to see this through.
Great. And Eric, I appreciate those comments. And I think a lot of that should be tied to just the work that you've led sitting on this board and making sure that the dots are connected. So at all, I think, Karen, it's about how we're moving forward, and we're moving forward together with our strong partners like FSU and others in the park. So good. Thank you for that. And Ron, anything before we make the transition?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, before we go back to Bill, Bill's mm-hmm. got a couple more mm-hmm. points, but Eric had brought an idea to me, and I don't know if you're prepared to talk about it, but in terms of some matching challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the idea was, it was not a surprise to me to see the four, now $6 million shortfall. We're nervous as can be to know what's going to happen with that IRCB, because it's a very analogous thing, and I hope the percentages are not the same. We're going to be in deep anyway, so if you just look at it, you got $10 million from EDA. At the time, it was roughly $20, $21 million that we were worried about. It's still a 50 cents on the dollar local investment, which is not at all bad in any way. So one thought would be a bit of a gamesmanship thing. They create a challenge, and particularly targeting those entities that had already put up some money. But it doesn't have to be. It could be other ones. It could be, like you do any of these sorts of things. And again, it's not the best time for FSU because the IRCB is in the wings. But pick a number. I don't care what that number is, but create a challenge where FSU, FAMU, the city, county, community leaders, anybody. You can figure out any kind of group. You have three of them, four of them, five of them, whatever. And then each put up the same amount of money to contribute toward the shortfall, which is obviously bigger than one this idea was generating. The hope would be maybe something like an order of a couple million dollars could be created by this sort of a theory. Whether that's true or not remains to be seen, but it was at least a step in the right direction to try and offset some of the increased costs.
Absolutely, and you are right. A lot of organizations, we've seen that here in our community where they will issue a match challenge and they get that donor out there. So certainly something that we want to keep on the table. And thank you for thinking about that. And Ray, you're recognized.
Yeah, let me ask a question, Eric. To take your matching concept a little bit further, why not include a match from the foundation into the EDA grant? My understanding is that EDA is going to give high priority to matching. So if you could use that concept.
Well, certainly. So the concept would be that whatever that would be, obviously money, but it would also be advertised as a match to make to grease the skids, as it were, for some of these other grant applications.
Yes. If I may, these are all great ideas, and the menu of ideas that we need to make the project happen. I also want to. A comment related to branding. I too am thrilled that Karen is here, and we all feel a sense of urgency. We can't turn the clock back. There would have been some logic in having a microsite when we got the funding, but now we'll spin those things up. Related to that, as a 501c3, we can take donations directly through a web portal. So it will take a lot of these great ideas and activating them as soon as possible so we have the commitment that we need to break ground in March.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll jump Madam in. Chair, question, please.
You're recognized, Dave. Mm-hmm.
University do a super job with naming rights. If we had somebody give us $3 million, would we name the building for them?
I think the price of poker might be a little higher.
6.2.
I had the opportunity to work with Seminole Boosters and FSU Athletics around the College Town project and the indoor practice facility and the strategy for the Champions campaign. And the way that I see this facility is similar to the indoor practice facility, in which there's a certain amount of real estate. The total's got to be, in that case, $15 million. And so there were slots for naming rights for which Al Dunlap, I think, contributed around $5 million for that facility. So I'm happy to hear you're ahead of me, sir, and we'll have a more specific plan for both the physical assets within the building, like the name on it, the conference rooms, and the digital assets that we can add to sponsorships, things like programs, promotion, websites, those kinds of things.
So to answer your question, Dave?
Well, I know the banks have certain obligations under the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act. And this may be something that you'd approach them. I don't see them giving $1 million, but $100,000 here or there begins to help.
Exactly
yes,
right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for that. Okay, we'll jump back in.
Yeah. Bill, you gonna pick that up?
I think we covered some of this. We should hear about Built to Scale in October. That is about $300,000 for North Florida Innovation Labs. We did get a commitment from OEB for $150,000. We'll present the board with a spending plan in the draft that we presented. It did fund the new websites and some of the things we would spend money on typically anyway. We applied for SBIR, STTR training through the SBA. I will show you a video that went along with the grant application a little bit. And then in terms of the new notice of funding opportunities, again, unprecedented amounts of money And that's summarized there. It's billions of dollars. And we just went through sort of the strategy for securing both foundation and sponsor. As Ron mentioned earlier, while we can solicit funds at LCRDA, there are several of the largest foundations require that you are a 501c3. We should get notification that we've been accepted, hopefully on or around November.
Okay.
All very good update from staff, and I'm very glad to have you, Coach Kevin, and Ann making that journey down from Atlanta. Hopefully, your flight was uneventful.
It was. All right. I'll start with an anecdote, and just bear with me, and then I'm going to stand up and talk to everybody. So, this weekend I did my monthly pay my bills, and my water bill was three times as much as it normally is. Okay. So I was like, okay, maybe we ran, you know, maybe there was a toilet running, which never got cut off. Maybe we ran the sprinkler. Didn't know what was going on. Then my son and I were out throwing the baseball over the weekend, and I went to the side of the house, and I saw a pool of water outside of the house. I had no idea what it was. I investigated. I saw the water pouring out of the house. So I identified that was the water leak. All right. So frantically called the plumber. They didn't come out Sunday night. They came out Monday morning, yesterday morning. And the comfort that I had from that plumber saying, I've seen what this is. This is your main line from the street to the house broke. And so you've got to replace that. It's going to be expensive, but we can do this. And if we run into this problem, then we can do this. We've done this. I said, well, how many times have you done this before? How many times? So we probably do it five times a week. All right. So my point in that anecdote is, we've done this. We've done exactly what it is that y'all are asking about hundreds of times over the last 40 years. And every one of these items that are on this list, we've looked at it at some point. We've worked with the EDA. We've worked with capital stacking, putting EDA money with philanthropy money, with our own money, with bond money, with debt money, with regular debt, with equity. We've looked at how we take a fairly simple solution and not make it complicated just to make it complicated, make it complicated to make it work better so that all of your answers all of your questions are answered, plus the ones you didn't even know to ask. So the plumber yesterday saying, well, what about this? What about that? I didn't even know I was supposed to ask those questions. So a professional coming out and solving this relatively simple problem that I was overly concerned about because of water. I don't like water around the house at all. But he gave me so much comfort and he said, don't worry, I've done this before. Again, I come here saying, don't worry, I've done this before. Now, we may not be the right answer, but what I can do today is tell you that we've done this a lot of times before. Some of the things I'm talking about are going to be different than what you may be thinking about. But even the last 5 minutes conversation on how does this coordinate with the new interdisciplinary building? How do you coordinate it with other grants? You know, how do you get a marketing message out? All those are things that we have done specifically related to innovation ecosystem facilities. All right, as Ron said, we came down for a couple of different reasons. One, we constantly are trying to update best practices among research parks around the country. So a lot of my experience over the last 20 years has been with research parks. So we came down, visited with Ron and Bill and said, just tell us the things that you all are doing that are part of a best practice. Because we go to Stanford, we go to Purdue, we go to IU, and we look at all the different things that other research parks are doing. So we're combining all those, and when we get to a point where we publish it, we're welcome to share it with, we'd love to share it with you all to see how your best practices relate to other best practices. And as a sidebar, we don't ever say somebody has best practices and bad practices. We just say, here's some best practices, and here's some best practices somewhere else that you all may want to introduce. But as we saw what was happening here, we said, you know what? You've got a new president that was mentioned earlier who's mandated, I'm going to move from $250 million in research to $500 million in research. You can't do that overnight without industry participation, without entrepreneurship participation. So there has to be some physical infrastructure that comes along with this mandate from an incoming new president.
We also see a College of Business is about to be built, or there's been plans for years for a College of Business. We see the innovation ecosystem that existed with Domi, with this. We say this is a place that's prime for really creating, really embracing and magnifying an innovation ecosystem. So a lot of what we're talking about today has nothing to do with the money that we're going to talk about or the structure. It is, you all are at a position where, and this is not negative, where Atlanta was 20 years ago or where other places were 5 years ago. But you're at a place where if you put all the pieces together, Tallahassee can be an innovation center for the South, for Florida, for the Southeast, for any place. That's what we're excited about. And that's why I say, hey, look, we've done a lot of these things. I don't know what all the pieces are of the puzzle in this one, but I can figure a lot of the pieces of the puzzle out. And then as we start putting the pieces together, there's some things that we can do. All right. So let me do this. That's the wrong way. Okay. I'm going to go over a couple of things. First, I want to introduce you all to who TUF is, the University Financing Foundation. So TUF is a national 501c3. We're a not-for-profit. We were started that way on purpose. We were started when the president of Georgia Tech 40 years ago said, I've got a problem. I want to grow my research enterprise. I want to create a place for entrepreneurs. I want to create a place where I can put grant-funded research, and I want to put those into a place. Can you all go out and figure this out? So there were three alumni of Georgia Tech who said, sure, if we create a 501c3, then we can approximate the cost of capital of the institution. We can be independent and deliver this on a private sector basis, still following the procurement that's needed to be followed, but doing it on a private sector basis. And then ultimately helping the institution enhance its cost recovery, which is what goes along with the grant funding that I got. So we built at the time a 200,000 foot building still used by Georgia Tech for all of their DoD research. And we take full credit for Georgia Tech going from $17 million to $1 billion in research. We take full credit for that because of that one building. But what we've done over the last 40 years is to say, okay, there's some tenants, T-E-N-E-T-S, tenants of that type structure that work anywhere. And so these are just eight of the examples that we've got where we look at a project in Chicago where it's a medical school where they're talking about building their research enterprise, but they want to have industry collaboration adjacent to the PIs at the institution. We look at, I say we've done this. We've actually almost done the exact same thing that you all are talking about at LSU in Baton Rouge, where they got money, $28 million to build a building. And then they said, hey, we need to bring it to life. We need to be able to attract industry. We need to be able to attract the entrepreneurs. We need to be able to put all this together to create a real ecosystem in Baton Rouge. And they already had a research park. Their research park is very similar to the Innovation Park. It's about 5 miles away from campus. There's not a direct connection. So there has to be a spiritual connection between the research park and downtown campus. Again, there's some differences. I know Innovation Park is not an FSU park, but it's still there to support the innovation ecosystem within the community. All right, so 40 years, 55 projects, $1.5 billion worth of activity. And I can honestly say most everything that you all say, have you thought about this? We would say, yes, we may not have done it, but we've thought about it. We wanted to put it into a structure in some way. So having the question that Ron and Bill have raised to us, where we said, can you do this? And Bill, Ron asked me a very simple question. Can you provide us $8 million? The simple answer is yes. The more involved answer is, but why do you need $8 million and what else is it that you need? So as we look at your current situation, this is the current deal structure without us being involved, where you've got the state of Florida who owns the land, the entire land is leased to LCRDA, and you've raised all your money, you're short $8 million. There's going to be this agreement with the new North Florida Innovation Labs and membership agreements coming back into North Florida Innovation Labs. There's going to be property management, and then the LCRDA is going to build the building, develop the building. What we're suggesting through this alternative, as Ron ran through, you've got all kinds of alternatives. You can get free money. You can go to the bank. What we're suggesting goes beyond the money. Where we can provide the money, we can be the bridge of finances, but what we bring are 40 years worth of development experience, 40 years worth of innovation and activation experience, where we want to take all the good that y'all have and make it better, and then put that into the overall ecosystem of Tallahassee. So how are we thinking about doing that? First, your ground lease stays the same from LCR, from the state of Florida to LCRDA. We would suggest that there's a sub ground lease to TUF, to our entity, and we bring the additional capital that's needed along with the $17 million, and we build the building. So we're taking over the development rights and the responsibilities. So whatever responsibilities EDA has in their grant, we take those over. There's lots of them. We've done it before. We know about Davis Bacon. We know how to procure the contractor. We know how to procure all the things that have to be procured under EDA. So we take over those rights and responsibilities. We assume the architect's contract that's already been done through the process, the procurement process. We deliver a facility, and then we're going to lease that facility to the North Florida Innovation Labs. The $8 million, though, is included in the total amount of the project as we get to the ultimate project cost. The lease back from North Florida to us is only paying us on the money that we contribute. So all of the $17 million that goes into the building that either LCRDA or the Innovation Labs contributes is prepaid rent. It reduces the amount of the cost. So our cost, the only cost on the rent is the $8 million. Then, or the difference, I'm saying it's $8 million. Right now it's 6.2. Then what we want to be able to do is help operate the facility, activate the facility, make it a live facility, integrate it with downtown, and then also help Ron and Bill come up with alternative sources of revenue. Again, we've done this before. So we've gone into an LSU and who said, they said, we want you to buy this building from us for $28 million. We valued the building as worth nothing. Because they actually had more cost than they had revenue coming off the building. So we went and we enhanced this with event-based fees, with some sponsorships, with it refining the rent. So instead of them charging somebody $2 a foot in rent, now they're charging $20 a foot and the people are willing to pay it because they're getting their resources from their own activities. So we want to be able to help enhance the operations for Bill. Primarily because, as you've seen, right now the operations don't pay for any additional debt service or lease payments. We think that there's an opportunity. I think Bill thinks there's an opportunity to do that as well. We want to be able to help create all this. So our involvement goes well beyond just this simple $8 million investment into the building. It turns into, okay, how can we help refine the budget for the construction? And then how can we help refine the operation so that we can create more income that can help not only just pay our investment off, but also create an income stream so that this entity is self-sustaining. I say that in particular about the construction budget, because again, our way of looking at construction is looking at things in per foot basis. So the $23 million is a $591 a foot building. Even the $17 million is a $430 a foot building. The most expensive buildings we've built, which are heavy lab intensive buildings in Chicago, have not come close to $591 a foot. So we think that there's a refinement in the budget of construction. So if we can refine the budget on construction, then the need for additional capital is less. We can just bridge whatever that amount is. And then we can help on the operations to bring in additional revenue. So again, you can pay off our investment and create a self-sustaining activity within the organization. The other thing about our capital is, this is a lease payment. So we would structure it so that if you received money, if you raised the grant money or raised philanthropy, then you could immediately say, hey, we're going to prepay the rest of our rent, which is effectively the rest of the investment. You could potentially even do that while we're building the building. So then we finish building the building and we're out and we're out from a financial standpoint. We can stay in any of these roles as long as you want us to, but we're out from a financial standpoint and you all just continue to operate the building. So there's tremendous flexibility in how you repay and when you repay whatever that that investment is. Now, we'll tell you that one of our questions, one of the ongoing concerns is the business plan. How are you going to create money? So create revenue. So we are really interested in this right-hand side. How can we continue to help build the enterprise? Because we are worried where that money is going to come from. You've got the ability to raise money. That's fantastic. But I do think that there's some opportunity for us to help on this right side. But then ultimately, I'll say, no matter what, we want to integrate, as you said, Ann, North Florida Innovation Labs into the ecosystem of Tallahassee so that it's not just, oh, what are they doing out there at the park and what are they doing downtown? It's what is the city of Tallahassee doing for the overall innovation ecosystem? All right. So the term sheet, I think, that was part of everybody's package reflects that we're going to provide the money to bridge the shortfall. We can accelerate development. That's one of the key things we know is every day that we're not out doing something on, you're not out doing something is a day that we're going to come closer to the delivery deadline, the groundbreaking deadline. We understand EDA. I think we can meet the mandated delivery dates under EDA, and then we can provide the full or partial repayment. When we get the development rights, we're taking over all of the EDA responsibilities, and I think that's a key because right now LCRDA would have all those responsibilities, which are, you know, they can be easily managed. But we've done that before. That's something we I'd say do frequently. But we can manage the funds, we can manage the responsibilities, retain the project architect, and then refine that budget. I think that's going to be one of the primary things is let's really refine what that $591 a foot is. I just think that is a high number. We know exactly where it's coming from. We've got increase in wood prices, we've got increase in concrete, increase in everything. But the $430 was also a pretty high price to start with. All right, then separately, as we're talking about property and operations management, we're talking about how do we enhance this facility? Okay, again, not so much the trash and the maintenance, but how do we make sure that the entrepreneurs in that office talk to the entrepreneurs in that office and coordinate with the scientists over on campus, any campus, FAMU, TCC, bring all of that together. We want to build activation. We want to enhance the revenue. And then, you know, growing a research enterprise like what the president of FSU wants only can occur by growing industry participation, industry cooperation. All right. That doesn't have to manifest in this building. But what you could do is to say, okay, if we're starting to build entrepreneurship programs and have an opportunity to work closely with industry, can we get them to sponsor? Can we get them to cooperate? Can we get them to do something that's a financial benefit to North Florida Innovation Labs as we're helping FSU, FAMU, TCC grow its research enterprise? And then overall, you know, we want to help support the tech transfer and enterprise growth, maximize indirect cost recovery. Again, that is not as applicable to an innovation lab as it is to a campus lab. But what it means is if we have more of an opportunity where entrepreneurs feel like they've got a place to grow businesses, then there could be a whole lot more research being done on campus that then manifests as new businesses coming into an innovation lab. And then these last two and really three are how do we develop this as a center of innovation in the state of Florida and in Tallahassee? When we built Tech Square. So one of our highest profile projects that we owned and delivered was Tech Square in Atlanta, adjacent to Georgia Tech. So a couple of interesting points. One, I've got a 200,000 foot interdisciplinary research building right next to my incubator in Tech Square. And the idea was something gets created, you know, research grant idea, something gets created within this research building. They literally walk out the front door into the rotating door of the incubator, go in, sign up, become a part of the incubator. They grow up, they become revenue producing, they graduate from the incubator. And then the big idea was we have a tall tower that's adjacent to it. You can't really see these here. This is the smaller building. This is a tall tower. They go into the tower and they grow their company beyond just the incubation. We had this whole life cycle of innovation within Tech Square. But also at Tech Square, since Atlanta is the capital, We have the state's Department of Economic Development. We have all of the economic development initiatives for the state and a lot for the city that are co-located within our facility. So an idea, a general big idea, is how do we get all those pieces working together here, whether it's physically here or whether it's downtown, how do we get all those pieces working together here in Tallahassee so that you promote the same type of environment as at Tech Square? All right. So again, as you can see, we can provide the money and we can deliver the building. And that's not a simple task. We often say that's the easy part. It's not the easy part. There's a lot of hard part to it. But our real objective is, how do we turn all of this into a much bigger concept than just delivering the money and delivering the facilities and have this be a standalone innovation entrepreneurship center at Innovation Park? How do we make it part of the overall community at Tallahassee?
I think great presentation. I'm going to open it before I will offer as a comment, because as you were going through both your experience and just the breadth of knowledge that you'll have, I was like, what is the catch? What would make this such an intriguing project?
Yes.
But by pulling it together on the end, I certainly understand. What about your organizational structure? What's your capacity? How large? What does your organizational structure look like to be able to take on this?
It's a great question. We're never really constrained by the number of projects. I can always go hire people.
Mm-hmm.
We right now have about 4 different projects. And again, that's about the right amount. This one we're planning for, not aspirationally planning for, saying, okay, if we get this, we know we've got to get the contractor folks, the development folks involved. But then our concept is really going to be, how do we help Bill and Ron run the overall administration? So we have the capacity to do it. We're a small staff on purpose, but we have the capacity to add a project, and this one in particular.
Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Eric, you recognize.
You mentioned the $590 a foot
yes.
price and compared that to a project in Chicago that clearly was less. I'm just curious, what is the difference in square footage? Because I know a lot of it is efficiency of the cost. Smaller things cost inherently more than bigger things. So is that part of the?
I'll make the comparison. That was 100,000 feet, and this is a technical word, we jammed a lot of things in there. So that price per foot was lower on purpose. But we also did a lot of value engineering. That's the construction word make the building more efficient. Now, there's a design that exists. We would inherit a design. All right. I still don't think the design is $590 a foot. I think it's probably more expensive than what we would like because of the inefficiencies. But I still don't think it's $590 a foot. The building up there was under $500 a foot. Yeah, right under $500 a foot. But it was much more heavy lab intensive. It had much more tenant build out. I mean, really, really expensive build out, and all of it all in was still only $500.
And so when you say efficient, you're talking about the proportion of leasable square feet?
So when we're talking, that's a great question. When we're talking about leasable square feet, the only thing we're going to talk about is vertical penetrations. So even that building doesn't have a lot of vertical penetrations. The wide hallways, we would, from a rental standpoint, assume that's all going to be rolled into the factor for rentable square feet, except the business model isn't about rentable square feet. It's about memberships. So again, I want to be able to work with everybody to say, okay, how do we price the memberships so that we're picking up any of the inefficiencies within the building? If we can, if we still have an opportunity to do that.
Okay, other questions? Dave, you're recognized,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah, I'm curious, does this proposal contemplate a tough staff position at Park?
No, what we would do is potentially, again, based on some discussions that we've had so far, we may or may not do this, but there could be property management positions that may or may not be tough employees, probably not tough employees, but there could be property management presence at the facility, but not a tough presence.
And that's beyond what we had anticipated with our staff.
Yes, nothing beyond what you had anticipated with your staff.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions? Keith, you're recognizing.
Excuse me, what is the cost of capital fees associated with going through your process?
Yeah, so this in particular is 6%, and we're going to be using our money. And so our money, our opportunity cost on money is 6%. So we said we're going to invest this. And the rental rate that's charged will be reflective of a 6% return on the money that we invest.
Eric, you recognize this.
Another question. You kind of indicated that the your perspective of what the space per foot is much different than what you probably heard from Bill or Ron or somebody.
Yes.
So part of the concept we've had up to this point in time is to get things as low as possible so we get the most infant companies involved as possible. Have you found that your concept creates problems in that regard?
All right. I'll respond to that in an anecdote. So when we built Georgia Tech's incubator, ATDC, it's the same concept. It is startups. The way that we put the deal together, again, this is the concept. The way that we put the deal together, we combined a lot of different sources of money into the capital stack. So when we rented the space to Georgia Tech, we rented it $14.25. The market rent was nearly $30, $28 a foot. So we were already at half based on our financing structure and the other sources of capital that came in. What Georgia Tech found is, yeah, there are some people that can't pay 14 and a quarter, but we also want people to value and be able to be running a business that you can support whatever your cost of occupancy is. So, you know, the answer is there a problem? There may be a problem, right? And if there's a problem, then you could say, okay, here's our infancy. You know, you could have a life cycle. Here's our infancy. They're paying $100 a month. And if they're not advancing in 3 months, then they move out.
Well, you could escalate it too.
Yeah, right. But the bulk of it is people who are, you know, we know that they're going to be either angel funded, self-funded, maybe some venture funding, but they build that into their business plan to say it's going to cost us some money to live in space. And we saw that at LSU. We see it at Chicago, Rosalind Franklin. We absolutely see it at Georgia Tech. So again, I'm going to say it's going to cause a problem, but it's going to cause a good problem. Plus, from what the survey that we've done of Tallahassee, charging somebody $2 a foot, which is about what it could cost with the small amount of investment we're going to make, maybe more than $2 a foot. Market is still $10, $12 a foot. So you're still well below market if you're even at least charging rent based on the investment, the small amount of investment that's been made.
And we're getting $18 to $20 a foot on the lab space that we have here. So,
okay. So I was just, where this is coming from is, it's possible. I don't know that this would be very often. Somebody with an idea and few backers or no backers even.
Yeah.
Might get an SBIR grant.
Yes.
And they're really hinging on that money to promote them to the point where they can get maybe a Series A or a venture or an angel fund.
Yes.
I guess my question is that compatible with the kind of thing that you're proposing?
Yeah. All right. So this may not be a direct answer to your question, but one of the things that we see as a trend in this incubator world is virtual membership. So somebody can become a member without having to take space, right? So that concept, the person who just got their SBIR grant, unless they absolutely need, you know, it's a specific kind of desk or they need labs, they can be a virtual member and still pay and work out of their, you know, work at wherever, work out of their garage. Then as they get to a point where they can move in, and have some additional money, they can pay rent, then they are pay higher membership, then they can come in. And I just don't ever see, and again, I think this is a incubator philosophy, I just don't ever see the value in giving away space for free, ever. What we like to see is, okay, you need to pay something for the value that you're going to have just for even being able to walk around the office and say hello.
If you don't mind, I'm going to add, and that's part of the reason our business proposition includes sort of helping on the back end with some of the other ways to make money so that you're not solely counting on the increased rents or the membership fees to pay for that. Maybe you have some other event-based fees or corporate sponsorships that can help bridge that gap so that we can still fit your model and cater to the type of businesses that you want.
Thank you.
And if I can add to what we're talking about with the SBIR CTR, we've all talked about for a long time, that's part of our strategy. Is we know there are some weaknesses in the Tallahassee market and its ability to support these, mm-hmm. $28 to $30 a foot. So we've taken the approach of really working hard to build that SBIR CTR pipeline where they're getting phase two funding. And we've got a few here in the park. Remember, one of our lab tenants is got a phase two. So and Bill is working with the rest of the ecosystem to help build out that capability to build more of those companies who can get those things. So we think that these efforts are going to pay off in our ability to get these higher level rents or memberships in the future. So it's not we're not just waiting to see what's going to happen when we get there.
I love it.
Now, so you're coming in with X number of dollars. Maybe Ron's plea to the state pays off. We can still put the two together.
Yeah.
You have an assistance at the back end on management and advice, so on and so forth. But we would not be paying, debt service essentially.
Correct. Yeah. And again, the other services are operated for a fee.
Mm-hmm.
So, we come in and say management services, this revenue consulting. So, yeah, absolutely. Again, we'd say that's probably what we'd rather do. So if you could raise the $8 million, raise it as quickly as possible. Because again, it's our money. We're putting our money to work here. That's fine. And I'll say it this way. If there was ever a default, then our money's at risk. What we know is there's never going to be a default because you've got $17 million that is truly at risk versus our $8 million. But we'd rather not have that money at risk. We'd rather just help create the ecosystem. Because again, we just see the opportunity for that here in this town.
Okay. Are there other questions? Because again, we were building on the fact that there are multiple options. This certainly isn't an all or nothing. We actually have, whether it's the money or the combination of money and services that really makes it win. Other questions before we, yes, hand recognize.
I just cannot give up the opportunity to ask you this question.
Yeah.
What's your take on the saturation point for research facilities, innovation facilities? We see these popping up all over, not just the United States, all over the world.
Yeah.
There's got to be a, is there?
No, I don't think so. I use the phrase that standard of living can only be increased with innovation. And again, as we saw through COVID, the only people who were still working in their office during COVID were those in science labs. Because as we say, you can't science at home. All right. So we see not only just that there was a lot of activity over the last 24 months, but now everybody is saying, okay, life sciences, combining life sciences with fintech, combining life sciences with all the other technologies, it is the wave of the future. So we do see so much more investment. Again, so you talk about global. And many times I've laughed at Singapore. All right, Singapore spent billions of dollars building out an innovation community that was empty for a number of years. Now it's full. Now they're continuing to build. You see that happening in other state-funded development opportunity or research opportunities. There are still a lot of countries who are saying, we just need to even catch up, at the lowest level, catch up to what the industrialized nations are, including the U.S. And then in the U.S., so I'll use Tallahassee. Will you ever have too much space here? No, not if the mandate comes true and is pushed to go from $250 to $500 million. You've got to have additional research facilities, and you'll never saturate the market. So, I appreciate the question because yes, at some point you're gonna. Is there a bubble of science facilities? I don't think there'll ever be a bubble. I think there's probably going to be a point where it plateaus, but we're, in my mind, this is my opinion, we're long from that, especially in this market. I think.
Again, good presentation, a great robust conversation. Questions, Ron, and you have for us some recommendations. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're recognized, Kristen.
I'm so sorry, Madam Chair. I was trying to wait here till the end. Fantastic conversation. Kevin, thank you for the presentation. I just had one follow-up question from our first meeting at our meeting with you at our committee about keeping some of the funds we've already raised back in reserve, obviously not the EDA funds. But, and you all will forgive me, I'm a little sick today. So I'm going to let Kevin, I think you know where I'm going with this question, dig into the details. But there was some opportunities to get some startup costs for the labs that may help us even in that fundraising that Ron was talking about earlier. Does that make sense?
That was part of a couple ways to look at this. One was the difference between the 6.2 and the 8, then there's another.
Okay, so it remains an option where we said the only money that's absolutely called for on what it's supposed to do is EDA money. And so what we have done in the past in this type of situation is say, okay, you've got $7 million of matching funds that still are going to be used on the activity, but if you retain those $7 million as startup capital, then you can do you can do anything you want with that. Under whatever the guidelines are of those matching dollars, you can do whatever you want to. And what we would do, instead of investing 8, we'd invest 15, the 8 plus the 7. That would move us from investing our own capital to actually borrowing, probably bond financing, that entire $15 million. The reason why it didn't show up in the latest version of the term sheet is because of all the additional approvals that would need to be done from the FSU Research Foundation, from OEV, from the bond market. Would we meet the time? And would we sufficiently meet the time? And I'm not convinced that we did. So we just said, let's have a simple proposal. And if during our due diligence we feel like we can do something different, then we can, but we don't want to hinge the proposal on, well, do you want to go this way or that way? Let's just plow forward, and then we can decide if there's an alternative.
Yeah, and that being said, our proposal is up to $8 million. I know that LCRDA has put in 1.6 of your own money. That could be something where you use that towards operations, and our 6.2 then goes up something closer to that $8 million maximum.
Kristen, thank you for bringing attention. And yes, a follow-up.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. Kevin, you anticipated, and I didn't get your colleague's name. I'm sorry. You all are very small on my screen. But you both anticipated what I was concerned about. I noted earlier that Ron mentioned approval from the County Commission for bond financing, other things. And I had a note. I wasn't sure if that was traditional bond or if it included TUF. So I think you're absolutely on the right track. I think there is an opportunity to talk about the 1.8 million. But overall, Madam Chair, I'll close it out with this. I just want to compliment everyone who's worked, Bill, Ron, Kevin, your team, on this concept over the last few weeks and all of the other ideas. This is a remarkable turnaround. And I think the added benefit of TUF could really help not just the lab, but the park and our ecosystem locally as we go forward. So I really appreciate y'all coming down today in the presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're very welcome. And certainly I echo those sentiments, and I believe everybody around the table, whether it be virtual or in person, that this team has done a phenomenal job of making sure that the options were laid out. So absolutely impressed about that.
Just one last quick
yes,
question.
Sir.
Kevin, of your 8 projects that you've got yesterday with pictures, I looked through it. I couldn't determine whether any of those are federally funded.
Yeah, let me. I know that at least. And federal funds come in many different ways. So the Rosalind Franklin, they have federal grant money. Georgia Tech, we have federal dollars like EDA dollars as well as federal grant money. The State of Georgia Archives does not have federal dollars, but what we have is a federal regional archives adjacent to the State of Georgia Archives that we attracted to. And that's an anecdote of we worked with the federal government to place those two facilities together. Florida Tech would have research dollars, Georgia State's housing, LSU would have research dollars, and Atlanta University Center is, we own their central utility plant. So one of them has the similar type dollars that we're talking about, the rest has grant dollars.
Similar type EDA?
EDA, yes, yes.
And so you had no issue with EDA with regard to the transfer of ownership?
Correct, and these are just eight sample projects. There's a couple other projects that we have EDA, and I'll tell it like this. I often like to say, okay, put everything on the table and let's figure out what the right answer is. So another way that we looked at an EDA problem was we have a building and we have infrastructure needs. Now, the project included both of them, but we separated the projects into the infrastructure and the building. And the building was funded with all private dollars and all the infrastructure was funded by the EDA. EDA was fine with that. We worked with them. We provided the matching dollars. So we separated so that all of the procurement that needed to go around EDA was just on the stormwater retention deck, pond, and all the roads and sewer. And then the building was financed separately. So again, given the right circumstances, we may be able to find a way to limit the EDA, limit the restrictions to just a portion of the building, combine our capital that has no restrictions. Again, it is limitless, but we've had no problems in ultimately working with the EDA on the right solution to limit the total impact or restrictions.
Yeah. Okay, anyone else? Okay, and I know that Ron, you wanted to transition to another phase of the presentation.
Kevin had a question.
Oh, I'm okay. Sorry. I'm sorry, Kevin, you're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin, thank you. We, for all the reasons that we've talked about today and in our previous meetings, I'm just super thrilled about this. I think it's a fantastic opportunity. One of the things that we had talked about briefly in one of the previous meetings was the impact or the effect of the P3 projects, P3 legislation. Melissa, are you prepared to tell us a little bit about that and what the how does this type of an opportunity fit inside of the P3 legislation?
All right, because that's the next leg of the presentation.
Next up.
Great. I'm just going to ask if you're ready for me to transition. And I was having some problems hearing people in the room. Is everyone in the room able to hear me just fine?
Yes.
Okay, great. And tell me to pipe down if you need to, because sometimes I'm accused of speaking too loudly. But Ron did ask that I spend a few minutes, Kevin Graham, so thank you for that great transition, talking about the public-private partnerships, which we call the P3 statute. And for those of you that want to Google it while I'm talking to see how accurate of a summary I'm giving you, it's section 255.065 of the statutes. And it's a lengthy one, but for today's purposes, we're really just going to focus on whether or not this statute applies. And I'll just rush to the finish line here and tell you that, yes, it does apply. And we can talk a little bit about why that is and what that means for today's purposes. And then I can just give you a sneak peek about what that means going forward. Ironically, the statute was really intended by the legislature to recognize that there's opportunities for public and private partnerships to facilitate development and operation of public facilities and infrastructure. And it's really intended to offer an opportunity for public entities to take advantage of those relationships. This is my term, in an expedited or more efficient manner than the statutes would otherwise provide. So I ask you or encourage you to think about it with that through that lens, rather than looking at this as a, you know, one more layer of bureaucracy, because that might be what you would otherwise walk away from this discussion thinking. Because unfortunately there is an added layer of what we need to consider before we can move forward with the TUF proposal, or frankly, you know, any other proposal that we were to receive, you know, similar to this. And so Ron's included some of the definitions here. The reason that this particular proposal falls under the purview of the P3 statute is because TUF is considered a private entity as a nonprofit entity, which is really very all-encompassing. So anything really other than a public entity would fall in this definition as private entity. We, LCRDA, are considered a public entity because of our status as a public body corporate when we were conceived several years ago in the 70s. We did receive a proposal. We could call it a term sheet or a letter of intent or any other term that you wanted to come up with, but it essentially falls within this definition, which is, you know, a term, a proposal, which includes specifics about how the project would be dealt with between the parties, including costs, payments, financing, who's responsible for certain deliverables, and what the project schedule would be, even if not down to the specific day, what the overall time frame and expectations would be. And then finally, the discussion that we're having is with respect to a qualifying project, which was a facility or project that serves a public facility, a public purpose rather. And then we actually fall under a second definition, which is an improvement, which could include equipment that will be used principally by a public entity or the public at large. So we do fall squarely within the definition of the P3 statute. Because we received a proposal from TUF, we really are obligated to follow the solicitation notice process, which it's not the same as a request for production or request for qualifications. It's much more abbreviated than that. We are required to basically notify the public that we've received a proposal, and we do that by publishing notice. And we've gotten in the weeds a bit here, but essentially, we publish notice for at least 21 days, no more than 120 days. And assuming the board agrees with my recommendation, part of the board action today would be to establish what that time frame would be for proposals to be submitted to us for response. A notice has to be submitted to other local governments in the area, and Ron and I will work through all these logistics. And then after the public notification period, then the LCRDA can go through and rank the proposals. Now, some things I want you to consider is you've just heard a presentation by a potential partner, TUF, who's already given you their background about their qualifications, their expertise, the projects they've already developed, the very specific business terms that they've already considered and developed, their innovative concepts. These are all factors that LCRDA can take into consideration. And so we are not bound by the same requirements that we would be bound in considering a competitive bid, which is what we're all very familiar with. So we have a lot of latitude and a lot of discretion in considering other proposals, if we even receive other proposals. And really, you know, we'll be able to ultimately choose the project partner that we think best meets our business needs. If the person, the project partner that we rank first, we pursue negotiations with that partner, and those negotiations are not successful, we can terminate those and move to the second ranked project partner. We can terminate negotiations at any point. So it's really a much more loose and less formal process than what we are all typically accustomed to under the traditional procurement process. That is what happens in the immediate future. Assuming that we choose a proposal to move forward with, there are several pages in the statute about what we're required to do in terms of making a financial finding, an independent financial finding, the terms that need to be included in our comprehensive agreement with our partner, whoever that ends up being, whether it's TUF or otherwise. And there's a number of additional findings that we need to make about our project partner. But again, for today's purposes, we don't need to be concerned about those because we're not to the point of entering into that type of agreement. That's contemplated certainly in TUF's proposal that we would ultimately enter into that type of writing. And we would of course make sure that those concepts are built into that writing, but you know, for today's purposes, we don't have to get too far in the weeds on that. So that's my big picture overview. You know, in talking to Ron yesterday, this was sort of the recommended board action that we put together. Certainly you guys are the ones in charge, so take it for what it is, but our thinking is that if you want to move forward, be it with the TUF proposal or any proposal, what probably needs to happen is that we get this solicitation for other proposals as is required under this P3 statute started as soon as possible. So we can run that time frame out, you know, just as quickly as possible. And as I said, the statute does require a board, a majority of the board to determine what the time frame is for responses. So that's my recommended board action here in letter B. I recommend the 21 days. I think given the complexity of the project and the stated public purpose, which are the two items for consideration in the statute in establishing this time frame, 21 days is appropriate. If you wanted to give some additional time, you could perhaps do 30 days, but I think 21 days is sufficient. There is no process in the statute with respect to you know, reviewing any proposals. So just as a matter of logistics, it doesn't make sense to gather you all together again as a board. So Ron and I suggest that you authorize the chair to establish a small committee to weed through any proposals that are submitted and make a recommendation to the board and include an evaluation of an operating plan pro forma. Ron, you snuck one in here on me. So you might want to, this might be a Ron topic to discuss. And then set a board meeting to review and vote on the committee's recommendation so that we can get off and running with whatever proposal selected and get it, you know, get it in writing and get our agreement written up and move forward with getting the approvals that we need from the third parties and get this, get off the ground and take off.
And if I can just add on that really could say any sort of repayment plan, whether it's rent or otherwise. But again, the point there is to make sure that we have some understanding of what, you know, what are going to be the requirements to pay this back and what's our ability to do that.
Absolutely. I think a robust list there. So board, we have before us the recommended staff and council actions in sequential order. Is there other conversation or is there a motion? Kevin, you're recognized.
I was going to say that I would move items A through E.
Okay, absolutely. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been properly motioned and second the approval of the steps outlined related to the funding options with NFIL. All in favor, please acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Okay, the motion carries. Excellent, excellent work. Okay, we have our path forward on that one. The rest of it will be not any heavy lifting. So we're going to move into item 9, and that's the election of officers. And Melissa, you are on tap.
Can you offer the opportunity for Kevin and Ann?
Oh, absolutely. You
perfect. Thank you all very
stay
much. Yeah.
With us or make your way back to Atlanta.
We're going to go catch your plane work. Back to Atlanta.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Kevin, if it stays as cold as it is, you're now going to buy your jacket.
Yeah.
I've got to steal your shirt. It's cold.
I'm trying to see if I can get take the key. I don't know. I don't have much planning.
Good timing. We didn't plan this, but
yeah.
We
should. Yeah, y'all are smart.
You can hardly.
First.
I'll use her.
I was paying attention, but I thought the online folks would think that, hey, she's looking better. She's kind of mad. And I'm like, I'm not mad. I'm cold. You know?
I have a green
sweatshirt.
Yeah. I was thinking about doing it.
Yeah, I'm like, get to. Okay.
I'll raise attention.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. Again, great conversation. All of that by way of the staff's preparation. So thank you again for that. Election of officers, item number 9, and Melissa, you'll be presenting that for us.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is the election of officers for the fiscal year of 2021-2022, and the following board members have agreed to be nominated as officers. Chair Kevin Graham, which would be effective October 1st of this year. Vice Chair Tom Allen, which would be effective October 1st. And then Treasurer Dave Ramsey, this would be effective immediately as our current Treasurer Sanjoy Goswami has resigned and that's effective today. So we do need a Treasurer to take over right away. So is there anyone that would like to nominate this slate of candidate officers and directors?
So moved.
I will
Second.
You have a motion and a second from Ann and Ray.
Great, thank you. Before we vote on that, Madam Chair, are there any nominations from the floor?
I see none.
It's really quiet.
Yeah, it's really quiet. I think it's a library, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm counting and I'm thinking there's not a lot of people left to be moving here. Okay, great. Well, then with a motion and a second on the candidate slate of officers and directors, then I would ask for everybody in favor of that slate to please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Madam Chair, it sounds like it passed unanimously.
It did. So congratulations. We look forward to the service of Kevin and Tom. And then Dave, you are immediate, sir. So we'll send you some for today.
Thank you.
I don't have any. Just kidding. Nothing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
11 is the homework for Dave.
Oh, that's the homework for Dave. Okay. So thank you very much. Look forward to everyone's service and appreciate everybody on taking part in the vote. So item number 10, Treasury Management, ACH payment, Ron.
Yeah, so we're going to need a vote on this item. And Melissa, do we need a quorum in the room for a vote?
I believe so, yes. Did you just lose somebody?
And okay, let's go to what's really worried.
Tell you what, let's... We can go back to mine if you like.
Yeah, or even with the chair's report. So we got the slate under hand, and the next item is just making everyone aware that we do, of course, have Sanjoy's resignation because of the amount of work that he's pulled into right now with Dan Foss, and that we are in the process working with Leon County. There will be other applicants brought before us. We're going to participate in the process as before, and we'll be, of course, moving forward with filling that slot. And then Ron, I'll let you jump into your
piece of it. Yeah, so I just have a few items I wanted to highlight from my report. The North Florida Innovation Labs Oversight Committee will be meeting next Tuesday to review the design development submission from the architect. So that process continues to move along. After this step, we will move into the 50% construction documents. So it's pretty exciting. We have that information. I think Peggy sent that out today to the entire board. So if you want to see the designs, there's a link you can download it. They're pretty big files, but you can peruse that at your leisure. Dan Foss is scheduled to break ground in October. I don't have the final schedule yet, but that means that under our terms of our agreement with OEB and the MOU, is that we can draw in the next year after that point $268,000 to go towards either office space development renovations to attract companies. We can use it for site preparedness and then also for marketing. So the plan is to work with Bill and Karen to develop a budget, a spending plan, which is part of the MOU, submit that to our budget committee and to OEB to come back and get approval from the board in October. We're certainly looking at how we can potentially develop or repair, replace the rest of this building in terms of carpet paint, ceiling tiles, and make it ready to go, because we're starting to see interest from folks who don't necessarily want a little office with no window, but they'd love to have something along the perimeter. So we'll look at how we can accomplish that as part of that plan. And then speaking of the budget process starts this month. We'll be working with Stephanie tomorrow to start going through and developing the basic budget. We'll be working on, as I mentioned, the OEB component. Bill's got his own wish list, and Karen hasn't had time yet, but I'm sure she's going to have one. So we'll start that process, and I'll be working with Dave, who chairs as a result of his recent election, to work on a schedule for that and advise all the other committee members to get this thing scheduled. So the intent would be to schedule the budget committee meeting in September. It could be one or more meetings, depending on the complexity. We've got a few more things going on at this point. And then Also, one of the items that was on the consent agenda was the asphalt question. That's also something that's going to go before the budget committee, given that the proposal we received was $192,000. We had $89,000 budgeted. So we'll go back after that and some other items. And then finally, you mentioned the IRCB groundbreaking. Bill and I went to the event, aside from being incredibly hot, Eric was there at 9 o'clock in the morning. President Thrasher spoke, and then also, and Laurel hosted the event, which was interesting. She did a great job. And, but what was really interesting is Ricardo Schneider got up and spoke and talked about the value of the research park and why they're here. And it's great to hear him continue to reinforce the value of the research park. And certainly we'd like to get more like Dan Voss here. So that is the extent of my report.
Okay, and I'm going to snag everybody on the action item while everybody's still in their spots. So number 10, we'll go back up there. And that is with the water transfer policy.
Yeah, so we, as a result of another item that was on the consent agenda, which was the purchase of the lab equipment under the Knight Foundation grant, we started looking at the way we were paying bills and, you know, how we can make that more efficient. So Hancock Whitney Bank has finally developed an online payment solution that I'm happy with in terms of the level of controls that it can provide. And they can actually replicate what we've tried to create here, which is a dual approval controls. And it's very tight. So I asked Allison Harrell from Thomas L. Ferguson, and I asked Melissa to take a look at Melissa in particular on the bylaws, where to remove from the bylaws these policies related to approval of checks and signing of checks. It's really more of a policy issue than a bylaws issue. And Melissa, you can chime in, but she told me that she agreed with that position. And then with Thomas L. Ferguson, Allison agreed that. Sorry, do you want to chime in?
I was just saying, correct.
Okay. And then Allison Harrell at Thomas L. Ferguson agreed as well that the policies that we are amending and changing to provide these with between myself and Talcor provides the segregation of duties that are needed to make sure that the bills are authorized and paid appropriately. So that's kind of the extent of this. It's the basic process would be that any request for payment over $10,000 could be handled via email to the officers, who would then respond directly to myself and to Christy at Talcor to authorize those payments, and then we could execute those payments electronically via ACH or wire transfer, depending on the situation. So we've amended all the policies to reflect that change.
And again, thank you for the diligence on that. I know former executive committee wanted to make sure that we had Thomas Powell as well as Melissa Baum, and that's been done to their agreement. I'll ask if there are questions, but it appears to be pretty cut and dry. If not, then I'll accept the motion. Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been properly motioned and second the approval of the water transport policy. All in favor, please acknowledge the aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Next item, bank resolution and officer authorizations.
Yeah, this is pretty straightforward. With the election of new officers, always comes a change in all the paperwork that we have to do to allow for managing the bank accounts and our investments. So I ask that we approve the resolution that was included as a sample and any other resolutions or documents we need to execute in order to effect the change in officers.
Okay, motion.
Second.
Okay. Motion properly second for the approval of the bank resolution related to office authorizations. All in favor, please acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Motion carries. Great. So we will jump down to our director report. Bill, you got any other goodness left in you, or are we switching over to Talcor?
We're going to share screen.
Okay. Oh.
Got one more step to do here.
And I'm going to move very quickly through this. I covered a good bit of it earlier.
One step. Let me make sure I've shared this.
Okay.
Years at home.
Okay. Again, I'm going to move through this quickly and cover a good bit of it. That's my point of the
record. Wait a minute. All right, I'll try.
Okay. I think I've said this. Not doing it's not an option. How do we get it done? I didn't know at what point I would be presenting this. So I was preaching a little bit as I wrote the deck. And I think that's the sentiment of the group. So I thank you in advance for that. As Ron mentioned, we're moving quickly through design and development. We've looked at some other facilities as options. In talking with Tuff and others, we're developing some best practices associated with how we'll actually use the space. Quick activity overview. I focused on first things first. Hiring Karen is a big win for the organization. She brings a lot of skills that are and experience that are needed. And we're behind where we need to be, so we're looking forward to jump-starting and getting going. Included in some of that will be a spending plan from OEV. They've allocated $150,000, so we'll come back to the board with a plan for that. Some of these will be marketing initiatives or expenses we'd otherwise spend. We completed the night plan. As a matter of fact, a truck showed up yesterday, said, Bill, we've got 5 pallets of equipment on the truck. We don't have a gate lift, though, so you can take it off the truck or circle back in another day or so. So the truck will be here. Eric's excited, so we'll be loading the new equipment. That grant has been also reported, so it's completed and reported.
And that's why the new facility has a loading dock.
Exactly.
That's right.
We got smarter, yeah.
That's exactly right. And just highlighting a couple of things here, as Ron mentioned, we are getting interest from folks locating here of note, and we sent a sample lease over to Mancorp. They're an ideal partner. They want a place for their clients to come hang out and have access to the National Magnetics Laboratory. They've also indicated an interest in being in the new facility. Another one of our cohorts is involved in advanced magnet design. We expect them to move into the lab in September. They too have indicated an interest in being in the new facility. Related to IRCB, I think that becomes a fantastic pipeline for our facility.
Mm-hmm.
Moving through, as Karen and Ron and I will be working on creating awareness and building the brand. As we talk about brand architecture, we want to dimensionalize the brand promise. Both in terms of perception and reality. So it's not enough talking about it, but we've got to walk the walk as well. It's software more than hardware. So it's the experience. Yes, we have to have a world-class facility, but all the other pieces and parts have to be there as well. We also want to create a culture, which is a little different than a brand. And that takes place across the ecosystem. And we want a culture that is inclusive. We want high energy. And those are some of the words as we look to create this culture that we'd love to have associated with our new facility. We went through this a little bit earlier. We are chasing every dollar that we can. As a matter of fact, there was a new funding opportunity I saw last night that has to do with entrepreneur training, particularly in the area of technology. So it's great funding opportunities are coming down. We've got a really solid grant writer and a really good
relationship with our ecosystem partners. Let's see, it's probably covered that. We talked about this. I do want to highlight this $150,000 grant we submitted to the SBA. And I think the video does an excellent job of summarizing the grant opportunity. It's another example of a great team, too.
Madam Chair, if you can hear me, it appears that we may be in a position of everything stalled and blocked up here.
Dave, were you talking in my little cameo?
Well, my apologies, but my and everything appeared to be frozen there for about 2 minutes.
So did mine. Yep.
Wasn't frozen.
Oh, well, thank you for that opportunity.
And thank you. This is a trend in some grant submissions, is they want you to articulate proving you can deliver. And so, Madam Chair, we thank you for your support of everything and for this grant submission. And if I may, our incoming chair may need to take up his game in terms of on camera.
Yeah, she's got the radio voice, doesn't she?
I think she might be our designated.
<That's right.
laughs> Yeah.
I feel the same way. So thank you for that.
Well, I wanted to also acknowledge the leadership that our chair has provided over the past 2 years. Great number of activities, forward motion, progress, all kinds of things have happened during this 2 years. And Madam Chair, I want to thank you for that leadership, for the enthusiasm you've put into the job, and we appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Dave, and everybody else around. You can't do it by yourself again. It takes everybody, but it's been great. And I certainly am just humbled to have had the opportunity and still have the opportunity until the countdown,
yes,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Kevin?
Yes.
Yeah. But thank you.
I would suggest that, Madam Chair, you've elevated the bar. You've set a high standard, and I hope that I'm able to meet the standard that you've established.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. Well, I won't leave you. I'll be your sidekick continuously. But thank you so much. Oh, and Tom, you're recognized.
And this may be more university folks. Is industry still providing research dollars? I mean, Pfizer and Monsanto and those companies still?
They do lots of research programs. In terms of the amount, it's a small fraction of the total grants.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Most of the grants come from public. But there's a lot of foundation things, but I would say probably the Mag Lab, many of them have a lot of close industrial interactions, either on a fee-for-service basis or sponsored research. But there's certainly could be more, but it's not huge.
Okay.
Yeah. Just have a couple more slides.
Okay.
Okay, and this is sort of a we're doing this, begin with the end in mind. And this is exactly what we're doing. We're building a regional economic engine for generations to come. So I started with this last year. September 2024, we're celebrating. Look around at what we've been able to do since then. IRCB is coming out of the ground. Loss is nearing completion. We've got more tenants in the park. Our region is becoming known as a place for entrepreneurship. Not doing it's not an option. How do we get it done? As I said, I was preaching a little bit. I wasn't sure when this part of the presentation would be done. So on behalf of the next generation of innovators, I want to thank you in advance for your support of this project.
Very good. Great presentation. Questions? Okay, hearing none, then we will take it to
the
property manager with
Stephanie. Good afternoon, everybody. I just wanted to let everyone know that FSU Anthropology has moved out and they left the space in great condition and took some pictures. So I'm confident it's going to lease pretty quickly. It's a great space. And then also just as an FYI to everybody, obviously as a property manager, it's important that the park is neat and clean and well cared for, as is my job. And I just noticed that all of our lovely light poles were not looking so neat and clean. So I contacted the city and just was told that we would be put on a waiting list for a year or two because it's not in the budget. So I just wanted to let everybody know that I am working on that and just give everybody an update on it. And that's pretty much it.
Well, you're always discovering new. So I had not yet looked at the light poles. You always say, okay, any new business?
I just have one thing.
Okay, sure, absolutely. And you recognize, huh?
So I am very excited about where all this is going. I think the prospects are good, but I want to especially thank Eric and Tom and Ray and Dave and the other people who have, and Kevin, this is probably you too, who have the ability to look at what may be pretty complicated financial undertakings that are in the future and look at them really carefully because that's our job, and it's certainly not anything I'd want to undertake by myself. But together and with everybody, really, really keeping our eyes open on it, I'm confident that we can make the right decisions.
Absolutely.
So, thank you.
We are in good hands indeed. So with that, motion to adjourn.
Madam Chair, one more quick item. That rendering of our building is so beautiful, and we have such great opportunity to once again put ourselves in the spotlight. So as quickly as it is appropriate, I'd hope that we get the media coverage of that facility.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I will work with Ron and Karen accordingly. Yes, sir. Okay, so we've got a motion and a second. So we are officially adjourned. Thank you.